This is the Boundless Pursuit Podcast, a show highlighting the purity of the experience without limitation. Each week, we'll bring anglers as diverse as the fish they chase, whether it be from your backyard or your bucket list. Freshwater, saltwater, conventional gear, or fly, we're bringing stories and perspectives from fishermen from all walks of life, from across the country and globe. In the digital age, authentic communication and networking is critical, and I'd love to hear from you about show suggestions, potential guests, or general feedback. And you can reach me at boundlesspursuitfishing@gmail.com or at my website, www.boundless-pursuit.com. That's where you'll find the entire collection of written articles, podcast episodes, and media. I deeply value the feedback, ratings, reviews, and support of my listeners, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm your host, David Graham. Now let's get on to today's episode. My guest today is a dynamic young angler and podcaster out of Texas, Brandon Bellotto. I first came across Brandon online when I was researching South Florida's non-native populations of pacu, of all things, and I found that he's caught a lot more than just that. Brandon grew up in South Florida chasing everything from peacock bass to tarpon, mixing in every opportunity to chase something new in the angler's paradise that is South Florida. Snakeheads, largemouth bass, snook, sharks, I mean everything. But what happens when you take a Florida boy and drop him into unfamiliar waters? Because right now, Bellotto is in the thick of his transition into life as a Texas-based angler. So that, in and of itself, brings up a unique topic: the challenge of adapting to change, and the pursuit of unfamiliar faces and players in the freshwater world. And most recently, Brandon's taken on the likes of Texas's unique carp and buffalo scene, where his history is more of a traditional sport angler, casting at some of Florida's most iconic game species, is really a far cry from the different challenge of the bait and wait style of carp fishing. And so during this conversation, we talk about what's up next on the chopping block of new targets, the importance of networking with like-minded anglers, and just staying in the mindset of a student so that you can continue to learn and evolve in this kind of situation. We also take time to talk about the launch of Brandon's own new podcast, the Nomadic Angler Podcast, which can be found on Spotify and YouTube. This is a fun conversation with an enthusiastic and passionate multi-species angler. This is the Nomadic Angler, Brandon Bellotto, to it. You know what I mean? But
gotcha.
Anyway, Brandon, appreciate you coming on here, joining. I know these podcasts are kind of a weird thing. It's the internet age. It's like real conversations, a lost art.
I feel you, man.
I've been following you for a while. Like, and I think the first time that I saw your stuff was, I want to say it was like a video that I stumbled across on YouTube about like pacu fishing or something. I went down this kind of like rabbit hole of wanting to go catch pacu. I'm like, I'm gonna catch pacu. Where do I find a pacu? And I know that you've done it a few times. So somehow I found your stuff. I know it was like, you know, you've done basically the whole rat race of the South Florida exotic scene, but we never really talked. So it's kind of the beauty of this whole podcast thing. We'll get to two anglers get to really actually cool, talk. But yeah, man, I really want to gloss over that. We'll touch on the Florida stuff. But I really want to talk on the recent move to Texas, because I think this prompts an interesting conversation for fishermen, in that you are in the thick of a major adjustment period, going from a place like South Florida to like, I don't even, where are you in Texas? East
so
Dallas?
I'm
where?
I'm in like the DFW area, so like East Texas, like Dallas, Fort Worth. Like specifically Fort Worth, so I'm like on like the western end of the DFW area, right in like the very tip of the where the Trinity River ends. It like splits off into, I think, the East Fork, the Elm Fork, the West Fork, and the Clear Fork, and I am on the West Fork.
Okay. Now, what prompted the move? Are you from Texas, or is this all a completely foreign territory to you?
So just totally foreign territory. Me and my fiance like just really wanted to change, like from South Florida. It was South Florida is great. It is awesome. It's, I mean, literally a fisherman's paradise. Like like the opportunities for angling down there, between the salt water to the fresh water to The inshore, it's crazy. It's overwhelming how many different things there are to do in a day. I mean, you could go out in a day and, I mean, you could do like 10 different, completely different styles of fishing down there, like in one day, 24 hours. So the main thing was we really wanted a huge change. I mean,
yeah,
like cost of living and all this other crazy stuff down in South Florida. So especially like where I was pretty close to the Keys. I mean, just nuts, absolutely wild.
Yeah.
we wanted a big change. She's in the aviation industry, so she's based up here in DFW, and there was a bunch of opportunities up here work wise that I was looking at to get into as well. So we're doing that up here to try to save up to then eventually move over back to the East Coast. But while I'm in Texas, definitely going to be exploring every inch of the angling world down here there is, because there's some cool stuff, man.
Yeah. Or were you born and raised in Florida, or had you ever left Florida before?
Born and raised down there. Never left there. Okay. Been there the past 21 years of my life.
That's cool. So that's totally different.
Born and raised down there.
Yeah, I was the opposite. We grew up moving. Like, moving has just been part of my life. I start to feel weird if I stay in the same spot for two. I want to stay put for a while, but I became like accustomed to moving. So I know Texas well. I absolutely love Texas. Before moving to Florida, we were in Arkansas. I've lived down in Houston. I've lived in Corpus Christi, and I live up in the Panhandle in this horrible little place called Borger. But I always love Texas. Texas is very near and dear to my heart. So when we were in Arkansas, it was kind of the same thing with my wife. We're like, we got to get out of here. I got to do something different. I want to see somewhere different. Maybe look at a place where we can stay put a little bit longer. But Arkansas, you know, no hate to anybody listening who might be from Arkansas, but it wasn't doing it for me. Trout and little smallmouth bass, just it didn't speak to like the big fish angler that's hiding in the side. You know what I mean? It's like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So I was applying to jobs all around Texas and Florida. I'm like, whichever one calls first, like they're both good.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, Texas is awesome. But so that's different. What about the wife or I'm sorry, the fiance, right? Is she from there, or is this a completely new grounds for both of y'all?
So believe it or not, well, definitely new grounds for both of us, but I was born in Miami. Believe it or not, she was actually born in the Keys. She is a true conk. So as they call it. So I was born in Miami. She was born in the Keys. We met in the Keys. And she has moved around a little more than I have. She's had lived in Hawaii. She had her mother was in the military at one point. So she lived in Hawaii. She lived in the West, on the West Coast, like over around like Englewood Beach for a while. And then she kind of went back and forth between Englewood and the Keys, and then ended up in the Keys. And that's where we met. But definitely completely new grounds. This is like my first time moving my entire life. I've always been in South Florida. So it's totally a crazy adjusting, just everything. Like being like living somewhere else is like wild. Like the first like week or two was almost like an outrage. Yeah. Like you're like, oh, you're on like vacation or something, you know?
Well, you may go through like the emotional swings more so than, you know, I feel like when somebody has lived a certain place their whole life, it's like you get eager to see something new, but then eventually there's this like, I don't know when, and maybe never. But it seems like, you know, eventually there's like this calling home. So you've already sort of alluded to that, you know, hey, eventually we'll move back. So that's kind of, it's kind of good, but it's adventurous too. But as an angler, where you're going halfway across the entire country to just completely different fishing scene, I'm kind of curious how you're adjusting. I mean, you're still adjusting. You're in the middle of it, but and now you get to see seasons, and now you get to see the effect that has on the fish. I mean, what is it? Is it snowing there? I mean, it's got to be freezing right now.
Oh man, don't even start on season. So we had one day of snow so far. Whenever this episode comes out, we're in January right now here in East Texas, and we had one day of snow. So I'm here thinking, we're going to get like 2 or 3 days that it's going to be in like the 30s. Because up until then, I mean, we were into like almost halfway through January and it was like 50s. The water was like in the 50s. The fishing was still really good. Like the carp were like, you didn't have to sit there for 6 hours. Like you'd bait up a swim in the river. You had fish in it in like an hour sometimes. And then you were getting bites from catfish. It was very alive. Like there was things really going on in the river. And, but man, as soon as that snow happened, we had that really hard cold snap. And for like maybe 3 days, it was in like the single digits, in the like low teens.
Yeah.
And the water went from like 50 degrees to like 38. And oh, man, it's been like that for like about a week now. And there's just, it's like crickets on the water. So that's been real interesting figuring that out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a puzzle we don't have to solve as much here as you know well, but like that, totally. That's going to be a totally different thing. You know, it's funny is that a lot of times, especially, and I think we're going to talk about the carp and buffalo thing here soon, but sometimes this kind of weather is really when it starts kicking up the most, but that's what I thought was real curious about your case and definitely made me more eager to talk to you. Because you go from these more iconic sport fish here in Florida and like and very nationally accepted and like held on a pedestal fish like snook and tarpon and like bonefish and like, you know, the characters of the Keys and even some of the newcomers like peacock bass and all these tropical type fish. So you're a guy who's kind of geared, or one would think, towards that type of fishing, that caliber of fish. And then what do you know? The first fish that catches your attention over there, a carp. I mean, where does that come from? Like, what is it about the carp that has seemed to have kind of grabbed your attention? Is it just the fact that it's something new? I mean, why seems to be like the main stopping point for you.
Totally.
Landing point.
Absolutely. I've always been a really big advocate, and there's a lot of them in Florida, and there's a ton of them in Florida because there's such a huge angling community in Florida, and it's even bigger now. But I mean, now it's tremendous. But there's a lot of, and you know, because you're there, there's a lot of species in Florida that are thrown under the bus that are deemed trash fish. Like, yeah, there is countless of these fish, and some of these fish are even. And as they are in Texas, I mean, they're treated barbarically a lot of times. Like, I mean, I've worked on a lot of sport fishing boats around in the Keys while I was there. I worked on a few sport fishing boats, like offshore charters, and like fish like barracuda, bonita, fish that are any like sport angler knows are a badass sport fish. Yeah. I mean, barracuda and bonita, like, I know a lot of guys that like catching barracuda more than tarpon. Like, barracuda, because, and I mean, you got to think about it though. Like, people that come from like Michigan, Canada, I mean, these places that, like, I mean, some of these people maybe have never fished in the ocean before. Like, when they think of ocean fish, they think of something like super crazy looking, fast, mean, like a barracuda. Like,
yeah. That's or a shark. I mean, like, same thing with sharks.
Or a shark.
People like, go crazy toothy, over a shark.
Mean. You know, it's going to attack you, something crazy like that. Like there's so many of these fish. And, you know, you come to Texas and you find a lot of the same. You find that fish, like, fish that are amazing sport fish, like carp, buffalo, alligator gar, long-nosed gar. Like, they are seen as garbage. I mean, and, like, they're literally thrown up on the bank in piles in some places. Which blows my mind. I mean, it's like the same kind of shock value that I would get from like seeing people scoff and gaff barracudas in the head and just throw them in a cooler to give them to someone on the dock.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, obviously these fish don't deserve that at all. They have so much sport value. The common carp right off the bat has been like one of the largest impressors for me as far as like angling goes. They fight so hard. It's ridiculous. Like, it's actually insane. Like, I mean, you'll hook them on a 10-foot rod mm-hmm. these car frauds. And, like, they're screaming drag, like, straight up screaming drag. They fight very much like Redfish.
Yeah.
I find it's very similar to me to a Redfish. And then it's just, like, the whole rig, like, all the little bits and pieces that go into it, it just, like, adds to the sport value, I think. Like, not only are they already such a yeah. cool fish, they fight so hard, and they're super smart, which, again, I don't know how people can call them trash fish when they're as smart as they are. They're so intelligent. Very spooky, super cunning.
Oh, 100%. Because that's what I thought was interesting. Like, when I scroll, like, your Instagram, and I look at some of the species of fish that you caught here in Florida, or you became accustomed to catching, it, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them seem like more the type of species, like, one, they're predators. Two, it's like there's more of like an active approach that requires like active engagement and one rod, one reel, throwing a lure, throwing plastics, artificials, and like fooling the fish proactively. Yeah. So for you to go from that to a style of fishing that's, you know, not always, but in many scenarios, like bait and wait, throw out a stationary bait and sit. You know, it yep. throws me off. I'm like, man, this is a totally different scene for this guy. But it's also what I like, and what I can tell about you anyway, is like, in all anglers, there should be like an eagerness and a willingness at times to be like a student or to do something completely new. Like, I love opportunities. And a lot of times when you get picked up and planted in a new place, like when I, like I said, when I was a kid and we moved, right when I start to get good at one fishery, I get thrown into a new one. But it was exciting to yeah. me as like a curious kid that now I get to start over and be like, you know, I get to learn all over again. I get to like do the investigative work all over again. I get to be a total novice all over again. I think some yeah. anglers don't want to be the new guy. They don't want to try anything new. They don't want to look silly or dumb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like you've gone, yeah. you did a total change, like from like,
yeah.
sport fish to trash fish. And you, we can touch on that a little bit, the trash fish thing. I feel like there's a much, I don't know, man. I mean, there's some of that here in Florida, but like me having lived in Oklahoma and Texas and Arkansas and South Carolina, it's like, especially out there, there seems like such a deeper just vitriol towards certain fish where that's like, you know, barracudas, it seems like here people will scoff at them a little bit, but to go out and create piles of like dead fish and just have this like spewing yeah. hatred for another living animal is like
it's a lot more of it out there.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah. man, I wonder what his impression of that is. Cause it's like it's just a whole other world. But
yeah.
Yeah, man. Well,
no, you're not kidding, man.
So what are you what was your start? I mean, you're still kind of learning this carp thing, but like let's say when you first got yeah. to Texas and first realized this body of water has carp, what was your first approach towards that species of fish? You showed up at the river with what?
I showed up at the river with, well, believe it or not, I actually had my first like carp setup when I got here. So I
okay.
my fiance hears every like almost everything that I think of with fishing. It just comes out. One of the reasons why I like wanted to start doing this podcast, because I have so many things to say. She hears all of it. She hears yeah. more than some of my closest buddies will hear.
Yeah.
And you know, so I'm telling her about all these things with the carp and everything. And before I even got here, I was researching it. I mean, because it was mm-hmm. one of the first things that spoke to me, because it's so technical and it's so different, like you said, from anything that I have done in Florida, vastly different. And there's certain things in Florida that you can do that are sit and wait fishing. I yeah. barely did any of those things. Like I didn't do much of it at all. Because there's so many other things to do.
Yeah.
And so I knew that was already going to be a massive change for me. And it has absolutely helped me learn patience, because you need so much patience with carp. So much.
Yeah.
And so she had actually gotten me one of these carp setups before we even got here. And I had like no idea how to set this thing up because like these reels are interesting. The one that I have is it has this really long spool. It's like we're casting really far.
Yeah,
it's like this super long. It's like a 45-millimeter spool, and I had like loaded it up with totally the wrong line. I had like 20-pound mono on there, which I think you can use, but I just like threw some line on there because I wanted to start using it.
Yeah,
I showed up to the river my first time ever trying to catch carp. At a spot that, knowing what I know now, like at the time of year that I was there, like there's no reason for there to be carp there. I had just a can of corn and like a size 4 J hook, which is too big.
Yeah.
And I'm throwing that thing out there. It actually wasn't a size 4, it was a size 2, so it was even a little bit bigger. And I just like threaded 4 pieces of corn on there and I threw it out, a bunch of other pieces of corn. Just.
Yeah.
No, like need and for what the spot is, how deep it was, like where I was on the river. It just I'm like just throw some corn out there, see if they come.
You know? Yeah.
Ended up with like 3 turtles and 0 carp, and didn't even see one.
The dang turtles.
yeah, the turtles are like one of your worst enemies. Turtles out there trying to catch
channel catfish and bullheads.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's you got to weed through a lot of other fish to actually get the target. But yeah, absolutely had no idea. And I did a lot of other fishing before I really got uber deep into the carp. Because I did it for like the first couple weeks that I was here. I went out and tried to catch carp like 2 or 3 times. It all went about the same. Just got a can of corn, threw a bunch of corn out, put it on a hook that was too big, caught a few turtles and went home. That was like my first 3 carp sessions. So it got to the point where I was just like, whatever, screw it. I need to, you know, what else is there to do besides the carp?
Yeah.
And at that time, the water was way warmer. It was in September when we got here. So the water was like in the 80s. The water level was super low.
Hot.
It was actually like, yeah, oh man. In September, it was still, I mean, we were getting in days with the 90s. We weren't exactly, it wasn't triple digits here in September, but it was 90s like consistently. The water was like, some of the lowest it had ever been in that part of the Trinity. Mm-hmm. What I remember, this past September, that just happened. But the fishing under these spillways that are all throughout the Clear Fork, West Fork, and the Elm Fork of the Trinity, which these forks spread off of the main river and go into like the downtown area. So like they go through Fort Worth, they go through Dallas, and these small spread offs of the Trinity have these dams all up and down them. Like there's dozens of these different dams, and they're not like mechanical. They just, as if the water gets up to a certain point, the water just spills over those dams. It's usually spilling over at least a little bit. The amount of fish that congregate on these spills in the Trinity is insane. I mean, there are so many fish. There's white bass, yellow bass, white and black crappie, largemouth bass, spotted bass, the spotted gar, the long-nosed gar. There's some gator gar. From what I know, there's like smaller ones that make their way into that smaller part of the Trinity. There are hybrid stripers. I believe I had a couple of run-ins with them before the water got too warm, but none of them ever connected. But they're in there, and when this water gets warmer, I'm planning on getting them. They're like literally right here behind my house.
Yeah.
But when the water was before the water got below 60 degrees, once it got below 60, the spillway fishing entirely turned off. It's crazy. It was like a light switch. It was like one day. It was. I mean, and when I'm doing the spillway fishing, I usually fish with like an ultralight rod because that's literally all you need. I'm fishing with like a 500 size reel. Like 6-pound mono and a light action rod. You're using these like little tiny lures that are like 1 or 2 inches long. Cause there's these little threadfin shad and I can't remember the name of the other species, but there's a bunch of threadfin shad.
Yeah.
And they're usually about like 1 inch long, 2 inches long. And there are hundreds and hundreds of them. Like one of the first guys I ever talked to when I got here told me that the Trinity River was filled to the brim with shad, as in like there's some days you can go out here on the shad spawn, apparently, like around downtown, and there's like the river is like boiling with shad. Like there's so many, there's just thousands and thousands of shad. Like there's so many. And you can literally go into the river with like a 3-foot cast net, and you can just blind cast it in the river when the water is warm, like in just a random spot, like literally anywhere, and yeah. You'll get a net full of shad from like gizzard shad that are like 7 inches long to like hundreds of these little thread fins that are like 1-2 inches. Like the amount of bait in the river is unbelievable. And yeah. For so many people telling me how dirty the Trinity River is, so many people telling me like how nasty it is, they would never eat anything out of there. Like,
yeah.
it's just gross and the Trinity's nasty. There is like the amount of life completely took me aback when I got here.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's literally insane.
The Trinity is one of those ones where it's like, it doesn't have the look appeal. I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but yeah, as muddy and as just void of life as some of those stretches of river look. I remember thinking the same thing in the Trinity, in some stretches, there's some timber in the water. There's some vegetation. Mm-hmm. There's some things that can sustain life. But I recall just not too far to the north of where you're at in the Red River. Like if you go there at times, like it's just dirt and water. There's nothing that should sustain any life. There's no vegetation.
Yeah.
There's nothing. There's barely any flow. It's literally dirt and water. And I could never believe how much fish, especially if we'd go out at night with like a spotlight, just showers of bait fish, life everywhere. But yes, it's such an interesting thing. But man, I know for like a guy like you who's caught big fish, you've caught a lot of big fish here in Florida. It's just funny that like somewhere like East Texas, your best chance at big fish, like the carp, and the buffalo and big catfish and gar, those represent like your best opportunities to catch big fish. So like, you know, some of the disdain for them is certainly there, but I'm also interested like in your learning process. Like at some point, did you start reaching out to any like carp fishing people to like seek the knowledge, or has this all been like internet based? Because in my experience, like I always found, and we talked about this a little bit before I clicked recording, that, you know, oh, like a lot of fishermen are standoffish. I always found like the carp community extremely accommodating and inviting and willing, like it very much like want to put their arm around you. And there's like, it's much easier to find mentors in that group. Have you embedded yourself at all in any groups or anything there? Because I know they're everywhere if you really look for them.
Yeah, so I've like just barely started to see it. When I first got here, I was just like, I just like had found a couple buddies here local in town that like fish the river, and through them I had learned these different spillway locations. And once I like learned these locations, the entire spillway game of going out with an ultralight and catching crappie, literally every cast, white bass every cast, largemouth, like just such fun fishing, that I did on my own. But that was literally such an easy thing to figure out, because I mean, there's so many fish there. I think just some people go there with too big of lures. Like, I mean, there's a lot of guys just kind of trying to catch big largemouth in the river, but if you get an ultralight and you start whipping around a little 1-2 inch swim bait, like the amount of different fish you can catch and like the quantity is so great. Yeah. It's nuts. As far as the carp thing goes, I just recently, I mean within the past like 2 months, started like asking some guys for tips. Like I had reached out to Austin that you had on the podcast before. He was super awesome, gave me tons of tips. Like when I was first starting out, like trying to get my rigs together, like trying to get the rigs down and like know how to set up my rods and things like that. He was huge with the rigs, especially like trying to figure out the size of weights to use per the size of hook, which is like super important. I mean, like everything with the rigs, with the carp is important. Every like tiny, tiny detail is like makes a huge difference, like massive. But then, so I recently started talking to a guy here that really isn't on social media much, but He had a YouTube channel at one point a long time ago, and I had seen a couple of his videos on carp fishing here in North Texas. Like, I want to say, like, I don't know, like maybe a month before I even came here. And I had learned a bunch about the carp fishing in this area just from watching his videos. I mean, like the little bit that he had up, watching these, like how he do it, like, and like some guys that post on YouTube just kind of post, like they really don't talk too much about what they're doing.
Yeah.
They just are fishing, you know, but if I'm the kind of person that I value so much, just being around someone that knows so much more than me, because like people don't have to tell you something for you to learn from them. Like if you're just around them and you really pay attention, like you really watch the things they're doing, and like don't just, you know, he's not just casting, he's casting at that very specific spot for a very specific reason, you know, and he's,
yeah,
you know, like raising his rod up in some interesting way while he's casting for a reason, like that's on purpose. And like when you start to take those pieces together, it really starts to put the puzzle together. Like for example, he, his name is Krieger, by the way. His name is Krieger. His YouTube channel is Cyprinus Addiction. Was his YouTube channel. I don't think he's posted on it in a while. He doesn't really post on Instagram either. But I mean, nicest guy, man. Like, I mean, like you said, like he's, and it's honestly really, really impressed me. Like these guys in the carp community are so welcoming. It's a huge culture shock from South Florida. Massively.
I mean, I remember it's really cool. You know, I know if you really start searching, I mean, those guys are routinely having meetups, they're having competitions. At the very least, you know, it's the obvious stuff. Nobody's going to really put you on there. They call them like swims. But as far as rigging and stuff, a lot of times, yeah, that's the good thing, man. I don't know. Like, I feel like that is the sign of like a true angler, like one that can really humble themselves and like seek information from subject matter experts in like an authentic way. You can tell when somebody's just trying to, you know, take your nuggets of information and run, but like somebody constantly,
there's a big difference there.
Yeah. Like when you always have like a student's mindset and humble yourself to the point of coming to people for information, I feel like other good anglers will recognize that and divulge to a point, but yeah, man, it's the carp community is a very, very interesting group. And you know, we have carp here in Florida. Well, we have mostly grass carp. I think maybe there's some common carp up North Florida. I don't know. I don't know yet. But yeah, the carp things, it is its own monster. And yeah, I think it's funny.
Definitely.
A lot of people who don't know any different who think that you can show up with a can of corn and a hook on the bottom. Yeah, I was shocked when I started going down. My goodness. You would never think that a style of fish that feeds, you know, mostly off the bottom, they feed off the top too. But you would never think that a fish like that has a reputation the way it has, what have such crazy detailed rigging methods and stuff. I mean, you know, shout out to Austin Anderson, who you mentioned. Bless his heart, he tried to like educate me. It was like he was talking to a child. Like my eyes started crossing. I got dizzy. I'm like, dude, whoa. Like it took me all the way back to putting a worm underneath a bobber with a push button reel. Like that's where my mind was. I'm like, but you have to be that way to be like at the elite level, I guess. But then what I really love is now you're starting to encounter the buffalo, which to me is like, it is like one of our national treasures. I feel maybe that's like, maybe I'm overdoing it, but like the buffalo,
you're totally right.
I feel like as far as North American freshwater fish, it is one of the most unique challenges to an angler. And it looks like a carp. Like you'd think it looks like a carp. It swims like a carp. It's shaped like
a carp.
It's like, they must be exactly like a carp. But what has your impression of that fish been? Because when I saw you encountering those, I'm like, oh man, we got a Florida boy out here chasing buffalo. Like I really want to know like your impression of that particular fish. And you know, I don't know, man. Like, what is some of your observed differences between the two? You know, I know I have seen it for myself, but I love to hear it from other people because it's such a underrated, just phenomenal species of fish for anybody that wants a different kind of challenge.
Totally. And yeah, you're not kidding. Definitely a different kind of challenge. So much patience. So much patience. That cannot be understated. The buffalo. What a cool fish. I mean, when I started catching them here, I was fishing a particular strand of the river where there was just, there's just like these 5 to 10 pound buffalo everywhere. I mean, they are by the dozens. You could sit in like that stretch of the river and catch 5 to 10 pound buffalo all day. I mean, you'll catch like 3 dozen of them. Like, there's so many. And they're so interesting to me because I haven't gotten any of the real giants, any of like the 50 plus pounders yet. So I can't speak for their fighting ability, but the buffalo that are like right around the, like maybe like the 15 to 20, like just getting over the 20 pound range, they fight so hard. They fight almost just as hard as the carp do. And especially when the river gets a little high and there's like some flowing water and like it like charges them up. They get super revved up and like they get these good runs in them and they get going. The fascinating thing about the buffalo to me, like right off the bat, is that they definitely are different from carp. And from the little bit of research that I've done from the carp to the buffalo are much more of, it seems like what you'd call like a pacifist fish. The carp will eat like smaller fish. They'll eat worms off the bottom. They'll eat crawfish. They have a much wider diet, it seems like far wider. The buffalo are way more chill. Like, they're just eating like detritus on the bottom. They're eating algae. They're eating like bug larvae. And that's it. That's like their whole diet. It's like just those three things.
Yeah.
And then obviously whatever us anglers throw in the water that they think is tasty, they slurp that up too. But
yeah,
they move a lot slower than the carp, it seems like. Like the bite, like when you actually get a bite from a buffalo, it's been one of the most things I've had to been the most patient with. The carp, like when they eat. Like they pick up that hook, they feel the pinch, they get super angry, they take off. I mean, sometimes they just straight up, you can't even set the hook because they've already done it to themselves. They scream off running. But the buffalo are so quiet, like pick it up. And man, when I was first starting, like when I first was catching them, even the small ones, the bite is just so different from a carp. It's so much harder to tell. Like, it's so much harder to pick up on.
Yeah.
And what I have found even more interesting is how you know that there's buffalo and carp around your bait. Because when I was first talking to Austin as well, I was DMing him on Instagram about it. We were talking about how, like, you can tell when they come around because you'll get like line rubs. When I'm fishing in the river, I'll use what's called a feeder lead, which is apparently it came from Europe. It's essentially a lead that has usually some kind of grooves in it that you can pack bait into, and it kind of acts like, I mean, it's just chum. It's chum that brings the fish closer to your rig. And on the river, where you have really murky water and also moving water, it's the key. It absolutely outperforms using just a traditional lead to your hook rig. It seems like by a large margin. I have caught some nice buffalo using just the lead by itself with the hook, standard rig, but the feeder just really is huge. One cool thing about the buffalo, to keep on the buffalo topic, is that the carp and buffs, like, you know, because you've been out there fishing for them, I'm sure you've seen it. One of the coolest and most interesting things about them is their surface behavior when they're feeding on the bottom. It's so strange to me. It's one of the most interesting things about them to me, that they come up to the surface when they're feeding on the bottom. it's so strange. And they will free jump. Like, you'll walk up to a swim sometimes, and you'll see the – usually it's the commons. It seems like much more surface active without any food involved than the buffalo are. They'll just fly out of the water like a mullet. They'll slap their tail on everything. Like, it sounds just like a mullet jumping, but it's 20 pounds. And they will surface like crazy when they have food under them. It's so interesting. But the carp, when they're surfacing over where your chum is, you don't always get that bite immediately after. What's so interesting to me and so exciting about the buffalo is that when they come up and surface, a lot of times you'll see them come up and surface, like right over wherever your feeder is.
Yep.
They'll come up to surface. They'll go back down. Like, and right after they surface, usually within like sometimes a minute, sometimes even less, sometimes it's instantaneous. I'll literally have watched these buffalo surface, go back down, and your line starts getting pushed around. Like, you can see them pushing the feeder around with their mouth because they're eating what's on the feeder.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see your line like kind of coming back and forth. They'll push it. They'll push the lead toward you. They'll push it back, and they'll grab the hook bait. And then that rod will just start going nuts because they're shaking their head because the hook gets stuck in their face.
Yeah.
And it'll happen like immediately. Like, they'll literally come up and surface, go down and eat.
Yeah.
It's like immediate. It's so interesting. It makes it really exciting. And it much, very much reminds me of like looking out for rolling tarpon. Like, I mean, you see one roll and they don't always eat when they roll. But what's so interesting about the buffalo is that they'll come up, they'll go down and they'll eat. And boom, and you're on. It's like so neat. It's
The buffalo.
Like,
and
why do they do it? It's like,
well, them and in due time, you'll probably encounter some of their cousins too, because just the whole group of suckers all have those like little quirks about them where they're, it seems like by and large they're all sort of shy, and they'll drive you crazy. Like, heaven forbid you find them in clear water, because you, it's even worse when you can see them. And cannot catch them. It'll drive you nuts. But you know, it's funny observations, and I think that's what's so unique to me about the buffalo is, in my opinion, I guess it's opinion based. I should throw that out there. I can't speak in absolutes. You should never speak in absolutes. But I feel like the carp, if you just say, like, as far as fighting goes, like, which fight's harder? I would favor the carp. Which is great if that's all you care about is just having a marauder that'll pick up baits and go. But there's something to be said and appreciated for the other side of that and getting them to bite in the first place. Like, that wrinkle in the challenge, you know, favors the buffalo. It's more challenging, although maybe the fight thereafter isn't generally as intense. Whereas a carp isn't as hard to get them to bite. But maybe they fight, you know, again, it's debatable. But I always thought that was one of the most unique selling points for that species of fish, in that, I mean, you're talking about a fish that can get 70 pounds, but their mouth is like your thumb can barely go in it. And it's like, you have to compensate.
Crazy.
I mean, it's weird because you have to use these little bitty hooks and this really subtle gear, but you also have to contend with a fish that has 70 pounds of body mass behind its shoulders. So that's, so
it's
like,
nothing to be laughed at. Like, they don't scream drag like a tarpon or anything, or jump, but they have all this weight to work against, which, like,
there's there's no way around that. And it's like they have this little tender fleshy lips, so like you have to really play these fish in to get them in. So even if they're not going, doesn't change the fact you're bringing in this enormous animal on tiny, tiny gear. So you have to be very delicate. Yep. But the way that they bite used to drive me, it drove me crazy. I remember fishing for them in an unnamed river in South Carolina. It's kind of like an untapped resource, I think, at this point, so I don't want to blow it out, but I was fishing there with this guy named Keith Sisney, who I hope to have on the podcast soon. Big carp and buffalo guy, like, very tenured in that game, and shout out to Keith. But he had this cool technique. And he comes from like the pay laking background. So it's like, it's just really interesting when you see, you got the Euro.
That's a whole other.
Yeah. You got the Euro like, tackle guys. And then you got the pay lake guys. And like some combination of the two is good to take. Like, I feel like the pay laker guys have really, like, because of the competition element, say what you will about pay lakes, but like the competition element has driven this these product lines, similar to like the bass community. So they really dialed in like flavors and things like that. But he had this very interesting technique where he took like, I don't know what it was like. It was like dough. It was like a Play-Doh or something, like a little ball of white Play-Doh. Oh. And he'd put it like 5 yards down the line on the rod. The rod still sort of sits sort of angled down to the water. Mm-hmm. In any case, he would put this little ball of white putty or something on the line. And it was the weirdest thing because it had a little bit of weight. It would like drag the line down. But like you said, when the buffalo just bumped the line, you'd see this doe thing go up and then down.
Oh, up. Neat.
It would like drive me crazy. Like we spent all night fishing out on this river, camped out there for a few days. And it was like when you sit there and you stare at this white ball for hours and hours and hours. And like, then that's your mind starts playing tricks on you. But it was the weirdest thing to watch that thing dancing. I'm like, that could be a 5 pound fish. That could be a 60 pound fish. You don't know.
Yeah, but no idea.
I always thought the variable was so interesting, but, you know, it's just, it's a different kind of challenge. Is people like to think that passive fishing is easy, but it's difficult in different ways. It like you really have to temper your nerves, your patience, your ability to focus on nothingness. Like you tell somebody to sit and stare at a dot on the wall for 10 straight hours, you'll go crazy.
Man.
Especially if you're mm-hmm. If you take a guy that's used to proactive fishing, that is used to like working the brush piles and working features in the water, constantly being engaged in the process, and then you take that guy that's all about action and say, now I want you to sit on that bucket and stare at that line for 5 hours. It's not easy. It is hard to do. You start and then without fail, if you haven't conditioned yourself, you got to be like a monk out there. The bite will always come when you're not ready for it, because you allowed yourself that momentary lapse in your focus. So, yeah, man. I don't want to eat up all of our time talking about carp and buffalo, but I know you can go on that.
Yeah, you're good.
But I'm very interested, and we can circle back to that if you want to, but I'm very interested on, like, you know, you're sort of in that waiting period where you got to wait on the warmer weather to get all the fish active again. But I want to know, like what is next? Because you're in this area where you've, like, got all these new players, you know what I mean? You got all these new quarries and different challenges to take on. Like, what are some of the other species you're looking to target this year?
Oh man, well, I know that a ton of my time, like, I bet probably I'm willing to bet like 85% of my time this year is going to be spent on alligator gar. I mean, I think that's just a given. That's just a given. It's going to be spent on alligator gar. I mean, I'm sitting here like, the water's in the 30s. I mean, shoot, a couple days ago, I tried my luck here at one of my local swims. That's a really great one that I fished with my buddy Krieger over here. Luck, I mean, this spot is so cool. It's literally 3 minutes from my house. It has commons up to, and I didn't even know there was commons this big in there, but apparently someone a couple years ago caught almost a 40 pounder out of this little stretch of the river here. 3 minutes from my house. I mean, it's literally right here. There's giant buffalo. There's buffalo up to 45 pounds in here. A guy had caught one that was like 46 in here a few years back as well. There's massive buffalo, massive commons right here next to me. So I haven't ventured out to any of those big lakes further. But anyway, I was sitting on the river. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was like 3 days ago. The water was in like the 30s. I probably sat out there for, I don't know, like almost 7 hours and just completely blanked on carp. But I'm sitting in my chair on the riverside watching videos on gator gar and just like drooling over the thought of them. I'm like, man, I can't wait for the water to warm up to catch these things. They really fascinate me easily the most of all of the quarries out here, because they remind me the most of tarpon. And tarpon are my favorite fish in the whole world. They remind me the most of tarpon because of everything. I mean, there's so many things about them that are so similar to tarpon. I cannot wait until the first day that I'm able to go out onto like a remote part of the Trinity out there and like see a pod of this giant gator gar rolling. I'm going to be hooked. It's going to be an insane obsession when it happens.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, and I tell this to everybody, like there's just different categories of fish, as you know. There's like, you know, you have your fish that you catch for sport. You have your fish that you catch for, you know, I don't know, competition, for food, for whatever reasons. But like, I just like the alligator gar is one of those fish that's like the pursuit of those things. You feel like you feel like you're doing something different. I know I'm not eloquent enough with my words, but it's like there's at some point when you're chasing these fish and you start seeing them, you're like, this is transcending fishing. This is like, it's hunting. It's like there's this adventurous element to them. Yeah. And I tell everybody, man, the day that you hook and catch and see and interact with a 7-foot class alligator gar, it will change your life. And like, maybe I'm going overboard, but I'm telling you, dude, like,
no, not at all.
For a guy like the way that I feel like you're geared, I can tell you have a genuine like passion in what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm telling you, it's like it's a different game. Like when you see them roll, it's weird when you interact with fish that like scare you in a way. It's like, this is different. Like you see them on TV, you see them in photos, you see them in videos, but like the day that you watch a 7 to 8 foot alligator gar roll, you'll be like, I'm in a different place now. Like this is, we're not screwing around anymore. Like if that thing bites,
yeah,
and I have to go hands on with that thing, this is, you're talking about an animal that has gone toe to toe with, you know, the old cliche is dinosaurs, but like that's real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're talking about
it's a fish thing.
And tarpon are kind of the same way, but like they have that character. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not a fish anymore. It's an, I call it an animal. I'm like, this is an incredible animal. Like when you start referring to a fish as an animal, you know, it's something different. But dude, I'm excited about it. I'm going to be your biggest cheerleader because I know you're going to have a hard time moving back, maybe even to Florida. To this day, like,
man,
I dream of going back and catching an alligator gar. It is a species of fish that has, like, it's one that, like, I feel like we have these trajectories as anglers. And, like, you might be on one path right now, and you think that that's your course, and then you encounter something like an alligator gar, a sturgeon, a buffalo. It, for everybody, it's different. Like you have those one fish that you run into and like it alters the course of your experience as an angler. And for me, like the alligator gar is one of those course changing fish. Like it has the propensity to like change your perception on what this whole thing is. Maybe I'm going crazy with it, but I'm telling you, dude, I'm like so eager to see when the water warms up, like Brandon's going to get one. He's going to find one of these fish. He has the mindset. He has the drive. He has the eagerness. But I'm telling you, when you lay hands and you feel the body on these things, you're going to go, oh my God, this is all I want. This is all I'll ever fish for. I feel like that's the one good thing about me not ending up in Florida. If I would have ended up in Texas instead of Florida, I'd have just become the alligator gar guy. It's like the only kind of good thing is like I can still like my time can still be occupied by more different fish, being that I'm from Florida. Yeah. But like, I just know the alligator gars, I might get crazy thinking about it. Like, it's one of those fish that like will elevate your heart rate, and it, like you'll lose sleep thinking about these things. And it's just, it's, I don't know, man. I know I've gone on my tangent, but like, and the long nose gar out there can do the same for you. We obviously have them in Florida. But it's just like you'll occasionally run into these caliber of long nose gar that'll make you crap your pants. Like you'll think they're alligator gar. Like, oh my gosh! Like that's where the world class, you know, 5 foot plus fish live, and they just have the misfortune of living in the shadow of the alligator gar. I mean, if you take the alligator gar out of the picture and they don't exist, that the long nose gar fills that space pretty easily because they get big. But that's the one right there. If nothing else, your repetitions you're putting in right now and how to find carp and how to find buffalo and how to find these fish is going to make you really good at how to find bait when it comes to catching these alligator gar. Because that's the worst part.
Yeah.
Oh, if you show up ill-prepared and don't have enough bait, I had many a times where I went to the Trinity or the Red River, and I showed up with no bait. I'm like, I'm just going to show up and then I'll catch the bait when I get there. And I remember getting there, I couldn't catch the damn bait, and I got these 200-pound gar rolling all around. It's like getting stabbed every time they're rolling. You're like, oh my God. But, yeah, dude, I don't know. That's like one of those fish that for me, it like turned me into the adventure, like angler that I maybe I'll say I've become that, but like that I want to be. Like when I caught those, I'm like, this is what I want to do. I want to chase monsters. I want to chase things that give me that like hair raising feeling on the back of my neck. Those fish that like make you stand back and like freeze you in your tracks and make you like have like this moment of awe. And that's one of them, dude. Like it'll do.
Yeah. It's like, it's a spiritual thing. I mean, like that feeling you're talking about, I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, like that's what, like one of the cool, I mean, I've had like a few moments with a few different species of fish that have made me feel like that. One of them was a gigantic sawfish that we had caught.
I had caught
with a couple of my buddies that used to live in Jersey in Biscayne Bay. And at the time we were in an 18-foot panga. It was my dad's boat, and we were out there shark fishing, and we hooked in this we didn't know at the time it was a massive sawfish, but we got the thing to the boat, and it was legitimately like more than 2/3 the length of the boat. Like it was the biggest fish still to this day that I have ever seen in my entire life. I'll have to do like another like repost and post that, because that was like 4 or 5 years ago now. It was a while ago, but it's animals like that that you just like, it's special. I mean, it connects you spiritually. You're like, I don't even feel worthy to be in the presence of this thing. Like this thing is probably like 3 times my age, and I'm like sitting here next to it, like touching it. Like it's crazy. And like you said, when it's an animal that like is a dangerous animal, it even more elevates that fact. Like this thing is not killing me right now.
Yeah. Well, I look at that stuff and I you got to appreciate why they have that hardware. You know what I mean? Like why they have the defense mechanisms, why they have those kinds of tools. Like, I mean, that's like a crazy example. The sawfish with an alligator is the same. Alligator gar is the same way. If you have enough depth to appreciate any animal, you recognize why they have those features and where they came from. So as soon as you start, when you start computing all that, like how far this species had to come to be right here in front of me, that's when
it
you're like,
makes it even cooler.
Yeah, that's when you're like, I got to bring my A game, because this is a fish that survived dinosaurs, that survived numerous mass extinctions, that has defied all these odds and gone toe-to-tail with like all these challenges, and now it's come to my doorstep. Like now it has to fight me. That's when you're like, oh man, this is the real deal.
Almost like, and like fish like that, like they make you feel like small. Like it's crazy. Like, because when you think about it that deep, and like you think about, like you said, where they come from, how they've become what you're looking at right in front of you, like what you're touching, it's like, it makes you feel small. I mean, really, it's like, this is like, I mean, you're touching history. Like you touch this animal and you go back like 100 million years. Like, I forget, I was just reading the other day what they say about the gator gar, how far they go back. Isn't it like, I don't want to say anything crazy. I think it's like 140 million years or something.
Yeah, they usually throw out the 150 range, but like, you know, depending on which scales, they'll go as true. Oh, these are 200 million, 100 million. You got a 100 million gap in there, but I don't know, man.
Regardless, it's such a long time.
What always takes me back with them is like, and it's eerie, that is one of the most docile fish you'll ever see the moment it comes out of the water. Now, I'm talking about the big ones. Yeah. The little ones will get a little squirrely on you, but the big ones will put on a show, swinging their head with their teeth out. That one, like when you see your first alligator gar come out, mouth agape, swinging its head, it will burn an image into your conscience that will never leave. But like what really takes you back is when you get them out of the water, you know, assuming you take them a little bit out of the water. That just lay there. It's really weird. It's like you feel like you've got this this like there's like this capability that they have to like burst in energy that it's very intimidating, but they'll just lay there so calm, so docile. And it's just like the weirdest, I don't know, man. I know I'm going on and on about the feeling of doing it, but in due time, you'll encounter that. It's a very strange feeling. They just lay there so peacefully, just sitting there.
Yeah.
And it's just a really weird feeling. I don't know. I always end up wanting to keep them out of the water too long. You shouldn't do that, but it's a hardy fish. But it's one of those ones that's like, I don't know, man. Every time I used to see them, it would give me such a deeper appreciation for them than something like a bass. I don't know. But yeah, dude. Well, that I figured that was like, I knew the answer was going to be alligator gar. That's kind of like, it's just, you know, it's one of those like pillar species in America where it's
huge
like
species.
Yeah. There's like keystone fish in United States that I feel like if you're an adventurous angler, like you need to experience like an alligator gar, you need to experience like a white sturgeon. And then like in,
white
you know,
sturgeon.
I don't know, gar. Like a king salmon or something, which I've never done, but it's like there's a muskie.
King salmon.
But there's a few fish. Oh, it's like, musky. Oh, I gotta like see a couple of these certain fish, but like the alligator gar is just, it's in that category, but
absolutely.
Yeah, man. So I want to know, like, you know, what's on the chopping block this year, fishing wise. I know you've got some like side projects you're working on. You've mentioned a podcast, which I'm obviously interested in. But like, what what's 2024 looking like for you as far as, I don't know, any additional fishing trips or side projects, anything like that?
So I've got, well, the podcast, definitely the biggest one. I'm so excited for it because I have an insane amount of things to say about everything fishing. And on my free time, I mean, like what I'm doing and now doing research for the podcast, like for like ideas for episodes. I mean, I rarely have to think of ideas for episodes. I mean, I could do an episode on every species of fish that I've ever fished for, and I will have an hour's worth of content to say about it. I promise you. Like, I've got so much to say about all these different species. So much accrued from South Florida. I mean, all these different small fish that I fished for. I have an entire episode just about palku. It's like an hour and a half long. I'm going to have to cut down a little bit. It's just an hour and a half of me talking about palku and how to catch them and everything and like that.
Well, I'm going to listen to that one because I still haven't pulled that one. I've seen them. I've had them eating bait off the surface. But they like come up and see my bait and go around it and eat the next one. I'm like, what the hell? So
they're
that one has
much
conquered
more
me.
Active. They're way more active feeders than carp, but they require like the same amount of frustrating patience. Like, so much patience, and they're so hard to land because of like where you fish them. Like you have these really steep limestone drops in all these lakes in Florida, these like HOA ponds and stuff that these palku happen to be in, and they're so good at breaking you off. Like they're so intelligent. Some of these fish that maybe may have never even hooked before, they know exactly where to go. They'll snap you off, and they're so powerful. The power behind those fish is ridiculous.
Well,
I'm
not gonna drag you down the palku rabbit hole here, and yet I'd rather wait for your podcast episode to come out, and then I'll have my notepad out and take the master class. You know what I mean? It's like an audio book.
Oh, I can't wait.
So
that's cool,
what's the name? What are we looking like as far as like full on launch? I mean, granted, like I said, I don't know when this episode is gonna come out. Maybe by then your podcast will be full tilt ahead. But like, what was like, you know, what was the inspiration behind doing that, you know? Why podcast?
One of the biggest things, I had a, like, let's say, how many years ago is this now? Like, I'm going to say, like, 4 years ago is when I was, like, consistently posting on it. I did have a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, I'm definitely going to put out videos. So before I go on that subject, the podcast's name is going to be the Nomadic Angler Podcast.
The Nomadic Angler, okay.
Yeah, and that's what my Instagram is going to be too, is the Nomadic Angler Podcast. And I had a YouTube channel like 4 years ago. It was called Island Life Fishing. I have all my videos still up there. It's great. I mean, and I'm so glad that I did it because I have this. It's like a log of like 3 years worth of just amazing fishing moments that I have all these awesome videos of. I go back on them all the time and watch them. I mean,
yeah,
just so cool. And just me screaming and just being a goofball, but just so excited. I mean, like, I got like videos like tarpon eating baits at my feet, like crazy mahi fishing, sailfish and paku and koi and peacock bass, so many peacock bass videos.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. Just so many awesome fishing moments that I get to go back on. But like and going back to like the fishing community and how it is these days, there's a lot of places and I'll admit, I mean, there's a couple places that I filmed that I shouldn't have filmed that, because there's people that were fishing those particular spots a long time before me, and they've done a lot of work to keep those places like not hidden per se, because like no one's really hidden. Like people go everywhere. People find all these spots. It's very rare that you're gonna go to a fishing spot that somebody hasn't been already, unless it's
hard to
in
be a
like
pioneer.
The middle of the Amazon or something.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of places that a lot of these, because one of the biggest things that's lacking in the fishing community, I feel like these days, is respect. It's especially in South Florida, and it's hard to see, because a lot of people end up getting a lot of hate for each other because of it, because there's so much like disrespect, and there's mainly a lot of disrespect for the people that came before, and it was a lot of my age group, and it was a big problem. It's still a problem, but it was a huge problem like 5 years ago when the YouTube scene was a little different than it is now, like the fishing YouTube scene, I feel like. But just regardless, there was a lot of disrespect, and I had felt like I had done wrong things because I had put out spots on YouTube that like just shouldn't have been out there. Like these guys were trying to keep these spots secret, and yeah. I happened to go out there and like learn these places and put videos up about it. And, you know, and I had people get mad at me, and, you know, everyone says, you know, haters gonna hate, you know, that's how it goes. You become successful, you get haters. But at the same time too, I felt because in a couple of these guys that I had pissed off, like I did have a lot of respect for them. So it like, you know, it like kind of hurt me a little bit that like I felt like I had, you know, like it wasn't my intention to like put their spot on blast and have like a million people there. And
yeah.
And even in the video, like when I'm filming it, I'm trying to like hide the spot, like not show it all. But I mean, people can find a spot these days through like literally anything. We have Google Earth and all these other crazy contraptions now. You can do Mission Impossible and find anything. But I had felt like I had crossed that boundary of respect. So it was definitely a big moment for me doing that a couple times on YouTube. And I had just really taken a step back after that had happened from the YouTube, just because I didn't want to put these spots out on blast. Like for what the YouTube channel could be, like it wasn't worth it to me, because I have a lot of respect for the people and for the fish too. I mean, like just not even talking about the people, but the fish. Like I really didn't want to, and especially these one spot that I remember particularly was a spot that would catch really big snook at. And it was a spot that a lot of other guys before me have been going to for years and years and years. And these fish were very spooky, because it was already a pretty pressured spot as it is. It was pretty pressured. But I mean, once I put that video out there, like for like probably a month after that, there was just dozens of guys there whipping everything they could at these snook. And these snook are in crystal clear, blue clear water, and they'd lay up on the surface. So you'd walk up to the spot and you'd see them. They'd be there, and you could throw whatever kind of crazy thing you wanted to throw at them. And they would blow out, and people would spook them, and, you know, I just didn't want to keep doing that. I wasn't about it. So, I'm like going off topic. I'm such a stutter. I'm like trying to collect my thoughts here.
Well, you went
pretty
from
recently. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I was almost cannonballed in. I think you found where you were at. Because you transitioned from video to like now you have this ambition to do audio. So I think you're finding your way there.
Yeah. So I just recently over the past like 2 or 3 months, like since I've been here, and I've had a lot of time to myself because I haven't had like a lot of guys to fish with. I had just met this one guy recently, Krieger, that we've been doing some carp fishing together, but I've been doing a lot of fishing by myself, just going out there and just wandering alone by myself out there. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of time to think on it. And I have so much to say as far as like fishing is concerned and wildlife conservation, just like the love for these animals, like you were saying, like it's such a special thing. It's spiritual, especially these big fish like alligator gar and tarpon and things like that. I want nothing more than to be able to share that. It's such a huge, one of the biggest drives in my life is to be able to share that. And I'm like, I can't just stop putting stuff out there. I need to share it. I have to, because
yeah,
I have so much to say about it. I can't just stop making videos and just not do anything with this and just keep it all to myself. Like, you know, but there's nothing wrong with that, because a lot of the best fishermen in the world are guys that keep to themselves and they don't post on social media at all. Nothing. They don't let any of their knowledge out. None of their secrets. That's great, because they have places, I'm sure, that they go every day. They see no one. No one knows the way that they do things, because some guys are amazing. I know there's so many guys in the fishing community right now that do things like nobody else does. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. I just, it's such a huge passion for me, and I love sharing it with people. So I'm like, I have to do something about it. I can't just not post anything about my passion.
It's a fun project, because I don't even know where my idea to do it came from. I don't know. I just had this sort of like epiphany that, like, you know, I had this eagerness to actually communicate with somebody in a way that went beyond, you know, social media interactions. Are they're just very shallow, you know what I mean? And some people prefer it that way. If you can keep an air of mystery on what you're actually about, you can actually make yourself seem like a lot more of a badass, you know what I mean? Like, if people can't really see what, you know, people can't really see what you're about, but, you know, I just feel like this angling community needs to get back to like talking. You know what I mean? The whole reason I did a podcast, you know, it's just, I put it out there. Wherever it goes from there, I'm cool with. I think the best thing you do is just put it out there and don't get too worried about, like, don't get worried about a return. You know what I mean? Don't worry about how many people are listening. Don't worry about trying to get, I don't know, money from it. But it's just a good way to put something out there that somebody might benefit from. And as long as you're pretty open with what that is, that's the best way to go about it. When I was first visualizing mine, again, this is just me throwing out things that tidbits you may take some value from. You know, first I'm like, well, I want to be at least an hour long, but you never want to go over an hour and a half. And then I'm just like, you know what? If my podcast goes 4 hours, I don't give a shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't want to listen, don't listen. You know, if you do listen, great. But it's not, I'm not putting, you know, as long as it's weird. There's like a level of selfishness in the process that you should like embrace. I don't know how else to say it. It's like, I do it a lot for myself. You know what I mean? I enjoy it. And if I get too much focused on what I can get in return or how much other people are liking it, I don't know. Then I start getting bothered by it. But yeah, man, I don't know. I just think people need to, especially anglers and outdoorsmen, you can really start forging and fortifying and strengthening the community with real conversation, with real talking, with real substance. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Not, you can only get so much out of hashtags and, like, you know, to each their own. But, like, you know, when I'm looking...
A picture in the caption.
Yeah, if I look on Instagram and your caption is, like, some rap lyrics, or if I look at a YouTube video...
God!
I don't, you know, it's entertaining. Or if I watch a YouTube video and it's just like a highlight reel, some of that's awesome. I love that. But, you know, sometimes you want to learn things every now and then. So, you know, it's fun to do the solo ones. Mine has obviously been more talking to people. Like, you're a dude that I've, you know what I mean? You're a dude that I've watched for over a year, for a while. I've seen your stuff, but I didn't know anything about you. And I'm like, you know, you need to. It's just not healthy. You know what I mean? It's, I don't know. I want to talk to other anglers. The good thing is,
yeah,
at least with mine, with this podcast, is like, it's amazing. By the end of it, a lot of the times, like, we're exchanging, like, invites to go fishing with one another. It's a cool way to actually connect. I'm like, that is what fishing's supposed to be. Like, that's what, yes, that would not have happened with a DM. That would not have happened with a comment. A lot of times, mm-hmm, you know, you kind of break down the walls and be like, oh, yeah, this guy's pretty cool. Like, this is somebody I can talk to. You know what I mean? Like, and a few of these episodes have led to actual, you know, meetups and stuff. So it's pretty cool, man. Yeah. But the nomadic angler, that's what I'm looking forward to. I know you've already put out at least one episode, but man, it's a fun venture. It's different. It's a commitment like anything else. But
So
where will people be able to find it though? What are you doing? Are you doing YouTube, Spotify? How is it being set up?
It's going to be on YouTube and on Spotify. That's what I have it on now. By the time this episode's out, I might have it on something else. But what I have it on right now, because I can get it up right on it, is on YouTube and Spotify. And it's both under the Nomadic Angler podcast. And it's on YouTube and Spotify. And then again, by then I might even have it on something else. But I'm just super, super excited for it. Like you said, it's a passion project. It's like it's the passion project. There's nothing else that I could ever be more passionate about on this world. So I'm super, super excited for it. And I just, again, have so much to say about it. And, you know, my fiance can only take so much of it. So it's got to go somewhere.
Don't talk to that computer. I'm tired of hearing it. Yeah. My wife can relate. I like send her fishing pictures and stuff. I'm like, I don't know why I'm doing this. She doesn't care. But,
oh man.
Yeah.
No, I tell you what, she's absolutely awesome for listening to me and putting up with it.
Yeah.
She hears a lot of it.
Well, the podcast thing is, it's interesting. They're a dime a dozen now. So sometimes it's like, it can be a little discouraging. Like your stuff's sort of like a drop in the ocean out there. But like I said, that should not matter. It's just one of those things you put it out there and I've really enjoyed it. I've had a lot of fun with it. Gone up and down, relaunching right now. But anyway, man, before we jump off here, I don't want to sell the podcasting short. Any other agendas you have coming up? Anything that we may have not covered? They're like, oh, wait, there's one more thing I want to mention. Anything else?
Oh, man, I really don't think so. No, I have a trip coming up pretty soon to go to Jersey to actually fish with my buddy up there in Jersey again. So I can't wait for that.
Nice.
Going to do hopefully striped bass, hopefully northern snakes again. Hybrid stripers, pike. Oh man, that area is so rich in fishing, and that's actually the area that I'm thinking about maybe moving to one day. So I'm really, really stoked for that. I can't wait for that trip. It's just gonna be awesome.
Yeah, that snakehead's another one, kind of like what I mentioned with the gar, where you go down that rabbit hole. It's a good god, that'll pull you in. But I've done the northern snakehead thing a few times, but listen, man, when the podcast thing comes up, seriously, any way that I can help or support, or, you know, like I said, if you go down the dark world of trying to get a guest every week, hit me up. It can be rough out there, man. It can be tough. It can be tough to line that stuff up.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard. But schedules and all that are crazy thing.
Yeah, we got to look out for each other, not
I
try
gotcha.
To. But anyway, man, Brandon, I really appreciate your time. It was a fun conversation. Felt
man,
good to talk about.
Thank you so much for having me on here, man.
Places that I used to fish and things I used to get to do. It makes me want to make another trip back out to Texas. I'm thinking maybe 2025. I'm a little bit caught up this year. I still got you. Okay.
Well, hopefully I'll have the guard very well dialed in by then, so we can totally link up and get it going, man.
Sounds good to me. Brandon, I appreciate your time, and I'll throw the links up. I'll throw the name of the podcast up before I drop this one and try to get people
Thank
on there
you,
try
man.
To get people on board listening. So.
For sure. Appreciate it very much.
All right, dude. Have a good one.
Thank you
for listening to Boundless Pursuit. Tune in each week as we bring stories and insight from uniquely talented anglers and outdoorsmen. And if you enjoyed this show, I want to hear from you. Be sure to leave a 5-star review, as this is going to drive the growth and exposure of this show. And if you have feedback or guest suggestions, I would love to hear from you. And you can reach me at boundlesspursuitfishing@gmail.com. For all other collections of media and contact information, please visit www.boundless-pursuit.com.